Good morning. G'day. I know all the Americans love it when we say that, so I thought I would just indulge you for a second. G'day, everybody. if you're in Australia, it's g'day, mate. In New Zealand, it's like, hey, bro. That's what they say. Hey, bro. It's so nice to be with you. What a beautiful community that you have. And it's just my honor to have been here last night and this morning in the first service. And now with you, I just think, oh, what it's a beautiful, beautiful gift that we can fly halfway around the world and feel like we're with family. And so good morning, family. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for making me feel so welcome. And I'm really excited to share a little something with you today from the Word of God. So let's dive right in and start talking about these important things. I have to confess to you, I'm not a painter. I'm not a sculptor. I'm not a fine artist of any kind. I have art appreciation for about 5 minutes, and then, you know, I'm done. I'm done appreciating. But early last year, I found myself in a really unique situation. I went to Europe for the first time, actually. Well, kind of for the first time. I'd been to the Middle East before, and never mind, it's details. So I was in Italy, and what better place to fall in love with art than in Italy? I was in Florence, Italy. And in Florence, Italy, is the Uffizi Art Gallery. And I found myself at this art gallery, ready to spend a day in an art gallery, which was instantly a challenge to me, because I like art, but a day is long, you know? And I was with a whole bunch of art-loving people, some really good friends of mine. And they had splurged and bought the fast-track tickets, because they wanted to spend as many hours in the gallery as possible. And I was just lined up with all of the other people that were on a budget and didn't need the whole day. And I was standing in the line thinking, okay, what am I going to do with this day? Because I like art, but I don't love it, and I don't really know that much about it. And so I was standing in the line, I thought, I'm going to set myself a challenge. I'm going to walk through this art gallery, and everything that I'm drawn to, I'll just pass the things that I'm not, but everything that I'm drawn to, I'm going to stand in front of it, I'm going to ask myself the question, why am I compelled by this? What is it that draws me to this piece of art? And so I did that. And in doing that, I discovered that day the things that I was drawn to in art. And I took a picture of it, and I did a little reading about it in the thingy, whatever they give you. And then I went to my good friend, Stuart Tyner, who's a bit of an art buff, and he knows a whole lot of stuff about it. And we had lunch, and I said, Stuart, these are the photos that I've taken, and these are the things that I love. And he starts giving me all this background on some of the artists and all of this background on some of the paintings. And all of a sudden, this art just came alive. The interesting thing about this, and the reason I tell you this story, is because how I viewed art at the beginning of my story is I think what we can sometimes do when we view creativity. We think creativity is a certain type of person. We go, oh, I don't understand the creatives. It's this whole A-type personality or organized person, and we start to sort of blanket cover creativity when I think what we're really trying to say often is that I'm maybe not an artistic person, but I am creative. So I wanted us to just work with a different definition of creativity, and I need us to set this up before we open the word again, because I think it's really important that we start to read it with different eyes. Often people are trying to say I'm not artistic, but is it possible that artistic and creative are not the same thing? So I want us to work with this question, this working definition. I'm going to ask you, church, what do you look at and see potential in? What are you compelled by? When you stand in front of something, what is it in that thing that interests you? Ask ourselves the question. In order to do that, and in order to broaden our view of creativity, I wonder whether or not you would just indulge me with a small illustration. There are some people in the world that would look at this is a carburetor, I'm told, because that's what I asked for. I wouldn't know otherwise, but there are people that look at this and know what it is. My dad's one of those people, and he looks at this, and he doesn't just see a carburetor. He sees all this potential, and he sees a car. It's already a whole piece. There are people that look at this easel or a blank canvas, and they can already see a masterpiece. There are people that look at problems and equations, and they already see answers before they even begin. There are people that look at a sewing machine and some fabric, and they've already got the tapestry pictured. There are people, this chair represents a person, right? There are people that look at a person on a chair, and they see mess, and they see dysfunction and they see chaos and they see all of the reasons why this doesn't work and all of the limits that are involved in dealing with people. But there are other people that look at a person in all of that, and what they see is the absolute potential thriving human being that they could become. There are people that look at seeds and plants and dirt and trowels, and they see a garden. There are people that look down microscopes, and they already see a cure. There are people that look at a list of ingredients, and they see an entire meal. And there are people that look at concrete and wood and dirt and mud, and they've already got the house built. That's not art. That's creativity. That's the ability to look at something and acknowledge that there's potential in that something. Are you with me? So I want us to work on this definition that creativity is what you look at and see potential in. Now, researcher Brené Brown says this, and I love this. She says, I'm not creative doesn't actually work. There's no such thing as creative people and non-creative people. There are only people who use their creativity and people who don't. Unused creativity doesn't just disappear, it lives within us until it's expressed or neglected to death or suffocated by resentment and fear. It seems like the only part of creativity that is a choice is whether we use it or not, not whether we have it. So let's ask ourselves the question this morning, what is compelling to you? What do you see potential in? Because that's the place that houses the most creative version of you. And that's the place that I believe the Spirit wants us to tap into this morning. So with that in mind, I started doing some research. And the best place to start looking at creativity is actually in creation, ironically. And so I opened up the Bible and I printed out the chapters in Genesis that speak about creation. I got out highlighters and I got out markers and I started looking at it with creative glasses on. And I started going, God, what was the premise you were operating under when you created? Now, I don't have these for you to have in your hand this morning, but there are some in the lobby. So if you want to sort of see the inner workings of the beginnings of this talk, then you're more than welcome to pick up this handout on the way out. But what I wanted to do was just highlight to you that I saw these four beautiful patterns in the poetry of creation. I'd love for us to dive into it in more depth, but we're not going to do that because we don't have time. So we're just going to skim the surface. The first thing that I want you to know is that God sees potential in things. That's why we're working with this definition of potential, because God sees potential in things. It's right there in the beginning. God then affirms what it is that he sees. He names what it is that he sees, and he blesses what it is that he sees. So with those things in mind, I'd love us to read these verses just together again. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. I'm going to pause there because I just wanted to bring out the idea that creation began in a void. Creation began in darkness. But even in the bleakness, even in the chaos, even in the nothingness, this word says that God was moving and hovering over the surface. Do you know the literal translation in the original language for that is nested? Isn't that cool? God was nested in to the darkness before he even began creating. God's grace is already baked on in there into the universe before anything happens in terms of redemption. That's just a beautiful picture of his love. And it was in this void, it was in this nothingness that God's Spirit was there, and God's Spirit saw potential. And creativity began when God acted on the potential that he saw. In the darkness, he saw potential for light. And church, praise him for this. He has been separating light from darkness ever since the moment he spoke it. And in verse 3, it says this, then God said, let there be light. See, he names it. And then God saw that the light was good. He affirms it. And then God separated the light from the darkness, and then God called it, he named it again, the light day, and the darkness he called night. And then there was evening and morning on the first day, and then God blesses it. It's this beautiful, beautiful pattern. It's this beautiful picture. And I don't know about you, but this sounds like really good news to me. And the reason it sounds like good news to me is there are moments in my life and there are moments in this reality, in this world that we live in, when we look at things and all we can see is darkness. Are you with me? All we can see is chaos. All we can see is a void. It's kind of like, really seriously, what are you going to do with this? And there's this darkness in this space that exists, and God's saying, you know what, let me use the pain, let me use the gaps, let me get that dead space, and let me collect it all up, and let me do something with it. I think this is the ultimate demonstration of the whole working things together for good. He's just separating light from darkness, separating light from darkness, separating light from darkness, working it all together for good. So God and his creativity, take this as your personal promise today. I know there's someone that needs to hear this. God in all of his creativity is already moving over the surface of your void in your life. He's already nested into your darkness in your life. He's doing that work. And it's as a result of him doing that work that we now talk about what it means for us to be creative. Because if he wasn't already working it together, if he wasn't already separating light for darkness, we would have nothing to act upon. But he's doing the work, so how are we going to respond to that? That's worship, our response to that. So let's talk about creativity. The Bible is, I believe, an encyclopedia of creative encounters that God has with his people. There's not really identical ones. Have you noticed that? God shows up in the beginning and does this thing with creation, and then through disaster and floods and famines, he shows up again, and then he sends large fish to swallow up runaway prophets and put them in rehab and spit them out on the beach they should have been in all along. I mean, what a creative God. He uses donkeys. He makes them talk. You know, I kind of just look at it, I'm like, this is the best hits album of creative encounters. Like, you don't get more creative than the way that God shows up to reveal himself to his people. He multiplies food. He takes the guy that was the Christian killer and he turns him into the most influential man in the Christian church. Our God is creative. Would you believe it? So for just a few moments today, I just want us to take two examples. And I want us to just look at them, because there's so much in it theologically. It's really rich, but let's not unpack it completely theologically, okay? Let's just put that aside for a second. There'll be some theology in this. And there's so much in it symbolically, but we're just going to put that aside for a second as well. And we're just going to look at it creatively. Can we look at it creatively? So I wonder whether or not you just put your creative glasses on, and we won't cover every point in the story, but we're going to cover the creative points in the story. The first story I want us to look at is the woman at the well. You may be familiar with it, but let me just summarize it for those of you that don't know, or for those of you that need to have it refreshed again. There's this woman that's going to the well at the time of day when it's not a high traffic area. And she's not going to the well when it's a popular time because she's trying to avoid the gossip that happens there. She's trying to avoid the gossip that happens there because her life obviously leaves something to be gossiped about. She's a bit less than favorable in terms of her reputation. And at the well, she meets Jesus, who's there to get a drink. It could be because it's hot, and it could be because he's very thirsty, or it could be that Jesus just wants to have a creative encounter with one of his kids. They shouldn't be talking. It doesn't look good. It's not good for the reputation. It's not good in the first place. And then Jesus goes on to tell her everything about herself that she could ever want to hear, or never want to hear in this case. She doesn't really want to hear him say her life. She's a bit ashamed of it. And he asks her these profound questions. He's asking her these things just while she's doing a chore, just while she's kind of doing an ordinary, everyday life thing. And then the conversation starts with, "Can I have a drink?" So it's a bit presumptuous, don't you think? The place is not that unique. The place is ordinary. But Jesus does this. Don't you notice this? He takes our everyday ordinary things and he gets our attention with those sometimes, because that's how creative he is. And he takes this every ordinary day thing and he leaves us, the reader, with all these questions about what the kingdom really looks like. You know, because he's kind of defying cultural norms. He's just doing his thing. He's kind of messing with people's heads when he's talking to this woman about everything she's done in her life. And so he's not really coloring inside the lines. He's very much outside the lines. which is a problem for those who like things inside the lines, right? So he meets her in a common place, in her routine, and here's what he does. This reminds me of creation. He calls out her addiction. He names it. In her case, the addiction here was relationships. This was her weak spot. This is what she used to numb the pain. This is what she used to escape the reality. This is what she did to deal with the void. This is what she used to hide from the darkness. And I could go on. But we understand, because we do things to numb the void. And we do things to hide from the darkness. And we do things to deal with the pain. So we know. We know what it's like. We get it. And he's leading her to this place where she can really feel loved. But in order to get her there, he tells her everything she's ever done, bad things. Talks about her messed up relationships. You know, he kind of defies the odds. How is it that talking about her darkness is ever going to bring her light? See, he addresses the void and he brings form to the void. He calls out her deepest need, love and acceptance. And he's saying to her, you know all that stuff that you're doing to try and get this love and acceptance? Well, let me show you what that really is. And he addresses the void by bringing form to it. And we know that we never truly feel loved unless we know that they know the really bad stuff and they love us anyway, right? Otherwise, it's all pretend. We can be in pretend agreements our whole life about you telling me that you love me, but you haven't seen this. Well, Jesus is like, well, I know that's what it takes for someone to feel really loved. So I'm going to tell you that I know all of this, and then I'm going to show you how I really love you. So he's naming all the darkness. He's forming all of the void so he can bring name to it, so then he can separate the darkness from the light. Not so she has to live with the stink and shame of her life. It's a beautiful. Notice the pattern. Notice the poem. He's already in the void. He separates darkness from light. He names it, he blesses it, and he sends it out with purpose. And what does she do? She goes running back to town to tell everybody about the encounter that she had. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. The second story that I want us to draw our attention to is found in Luke chapter 5. And there are four friends in this story, and they have another friend. But their other friend is in a different situation to them. He's stuck on a mat. He's paralyzed. It seems like he might have been that way for a very, very long time. And the reason I bring up this story is because I want to talk about the creativity of the four friends. These four friends are creative guys, and they devise a way to get their sick friend in front of Jesus. They see potential for healing. They see potential, notice the word, for change. And they take it upon themselves to do something about it. They carry their friend to where Jesus is. But when they get there, there are some limits. The first limit is that the Pharisees and the teachers of the law are there. And these guys are kind of blockers for creativity. Now, the reason they're blockers for creativity is because it's uncomfortable for them. There's a lesson in that for us. They weren't convinced yet of this Jesus and the stories they'd been told. So they were sitting on the outside doing the observing and the judging because they were a bit uncomfortable. And you know what, church? Let's just call it how it is. Sometimes when we're a bit uncomfortable, we sit on the outside being the observers and the judges and the blockers. Because creativity sometimes creates some uncomfortable within us. It's not coloring inside the lines. The second limit that these friends encounter as they're bringing their guy before Jesus is they couldn't actually even get in the house. The house was crowded. There were people flowing out of the doors and nobody was moving out of the way. So they had to get really creative. Like if you think about it, I'm sure they didn't go, you know what, let's take our friend to Jesus and let's rig ourselves up with everything we need in case we need to get into the house a creative way. They get to the house and they discover that they can't get in. So they have to think about it on the spot. So they get creative. They go up to the roof and they start lifting tiles off the roof. And they lift the tiles off the roof and they start lowering their friend in front of Jesus. The crowd was no deterrent for them. But what happens when they do that is that they pull attention away from what's already going on in the room. When people get creative, sometimes they create a distraction. And that disrupts what's going on in the room. Now, the interesting thing about that is that we can relate to that. If we're sitting here today and somebody needed to bring their friend to Jesus and they couldn't get in, if they start lowering somebody through the ceiling, that would get our attention, wouldn't it? And I think some of us would be concerned about the person,
But there'd be a whole bunch of us in the room going, who's going to fix the roof? We can get like that. Creativity creates a disturbance sometimes, and we get preoccupied with the disturbance rather than what the object of the potential of the creativity is. When you are fulfilling your creative potential, I believe that there will be times when that is disruptive for somebody else. And that can derail us. That can hijack it. But not these four guys. They were intent on getting their friend in front of Jesus. And the reason they did that is because the mission for them was greater than the cost. The cost will come. Often there's a cost. But do we put the cost to be the big thing, or do we put the mission to be the big thing? Right? The man gets in front of the Creator. I love this. He's in front of his Jesus, the person that spoke the world into existence in the first place. And the Creator then speaks light into darkness for him, and he heals him. But here's the cool thing. He turns to the friends and he says, because of their faith, you are healed. He doesn't look at the man and go, because of your faith, you were healed. The man was powerless. He was just laying on the mat in the darkness, in the stench of his life. And he says, because of your creativity, because of your faith, you are healed. When you are living your creative potential, and that creative potential is about getting people that need Jesus in front of Jesus, you can be somebody that has something to do with the healing of this person. That's exciting. When you see potential in this person, you can be a part of the healing of this person. Let's not be deterred by the room that we can't get into or the judgmental people on the outside, because there's a whole lot at stake. The faith of these guys made him well. The creative power that spoke the world into existence from a void of nothingness is the same creative power that speaks to us when we're crippled and captive and stuck on our mats. And he transforms us into new creatures, into a new... So he's already in the void. He's nested in. He's just waiting to do this work. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Here's the thing that I can't get over. He could have said to this guy, okay, leave it all behind, run, be well, be healed. But he says something really interesting to this man on the mat. He says, pick up your mat. Why would he tell him to pick up his mat? Why? Wouldn't you want to leave that behind? That's where you've been confined for so long. That's the stench of the darkness of his life. That is everything that he would want to leave behind. But do you know what I think that Jesus might be doing here? I think he might be saying to the guy, pick up your canvas. Pick up your story and go and use it as a symbol, as a prop, as a living example of what I can do to transform people's lives. Go be creative with the mat that you've been confined to. Live free of it, but reveal to people that they don't have to be in the darkness on their mat. They don't have to, because I'm already in the void. Isn't that beautiful? Pick up your mat. Don't leave it behind. Pick up your story. I think sometimes when God redeems us, we would like to just forget about part A of our lives and move on to part B. But I think we have a Creator that's going, please be creative with this. Please see the potential in this. Please take your story and be generous with it and help use it to transform other people's lives. Don't be selfish with the mat. Be vulnerable with the mat. The mat tells a story. In her transcript, Evangelism, Ellen White calls for creativity when she says, whatever may have been your former practice, it's not necessary for you to repeat it again and again and again in the same way. She says, God would have new and untried methods followed. Break in. I love this language. Break in upon the people and surprise them. Break in. I think that's what the four creative friends did with the guy on the roof. They broke in. And they surprised the crowd. It wasn't their normal order of worship. It wasn't how they did things. But we're encouraged to break in because, church, you know what? It's very, very easy for us to get caught up in what limits us. The judgmental people on the outside, or the crowd, or the darkness, or our pain, or our void. It's very, very easy for us to get into that. But God, Creator God, is nested into the darkness in the first place. And far be it for us to look at something and see potential and then go, you know what, somebody should do something about that. You see the potential. God gave you eyes to see it. That's because you're created to do something about that. There's a reason you see it. When you see a need, that's the moment where you should feel the call. That's God saying, hey, I want to do something creative in your life. I'm calling you to this. I don't see the same thing that Pastor Tara sees. I have to do something with what I see. I can't turn it into a car. What is it that he's calling you to do, church? Because it takes creativity to walk into a world of sin and darkness and bring light to it. And that's our calling. It takes creativity to reach someone who hasn't wanted to pay attention to God, and they're numb, and they're just going about their routine as per usual, and finally say, and they can finally say, I missed you, God. That's what was missing. I missed you, God. It takes creativity and courage to see the potential in something and not just say, you know what, somebody else should do something about that, but realize, oh, maybe that somebody is me because I see it. And when you see a void, church, you can bring light. You can bring light to that void. It takes creativity and tenacity to start lifting the tiles off ceilings in our lives and start creatively getting people in front of Jesus so they can see him. Not the limitation, not the crowd, not the law, but the possibility of a relationship with Jesus. It takes creativity and commitment to pick up our dark place, our stench, our void that God has transformed, and have the vulnerability to use it and to run back to town and to tell people about that story, about the God who knows everything about you and he loves you anyway. We, the church, you, Azure Hills Church, are a gallery of potential, created to be creative by the Spirit at work within us to separate light from dark, to give it a name, to say it's good. First, by allowing God this morning to do a creative work within you, if that's what you need, he's already nested in, he's already in the void. For God to do this creative work in you, allowing him to rest in the void that exists for you, to breathe and for him to speak life into it, and through his mighty power at work within us, have him creatively use us to do exceedingly abundantly beyond more than we could ask or think. He wants to do exceedingly abundantly beyond more than you can ask or think. And so today I wanted to invite you to renew your commitment to creativity, to trust the Spirit. When you see potential in something, trust the Spirit. Think to yourself, God wants me to do something about that. Because creativity begins when you act on the potential that you see. And as we experience this closing song, I wanted to invite you to renew your commitment to creativity, if that's what you'd like. We're putting the lyrics on the screen because it's just so much easier to let it soak in when you can see the words for yourself. But as we go through this final song of response, I don't like to prescribe how people respond. So I just like you to do whatever you'd like to do. You might like to open your hands as you feel the Spirit prompting you to just kind of commit to seeing potential and acting on it. I'd invite you to stand, sing along, kneel. Whatever it is that you need to do just to say, yeah, God, okay. I want to look for potential. I want to act creatively in the way that you designed me to do it uniquely. I want to be somebody that has something to do with that person's healing. Thank you, Creator God, for already being nested into the void. And after this song, Pastor Tara is going to come. She's just going to pray over that commitment for this local church. Because imagine, church, imagine the power of a people who are willing to go to any lengths creatively to reach his world for his glory. Imagine the power of that kind of community that's willing to lift the tiles off the roof. It's willing to let God love into their dark places and to tell their story.